Chapter 6. He had only expected strangers, and promised to come that day if she would tell him the way. That she could easily do. The short way was across that glade he saw there, then over the stile into the wood, following the path till it came out upon the turnpike road. He would then be almost close to the house. The distance was about 2 miles and a half. But if he thought it too far for a walk, she would drive on to the town, whereas he had been going when he came, and instead of returning straight to her father's, would come back and pick him up. It was not at all necessary, he thought. He was a walker, and could find the path. At this moment a servant came to tell Miss Destancy that the telegraph was calling her. Odd is lucky that I was not gone again. ... she exclaimed. John seldom reads it, right if I am away. ... It now seemed quite in the ordinary course that, as a friend of her father's, he should accompany her to the instrument. So up they went together, and immediately on reaching it, she applied her ear to the instrument, and began to gather the message. Somerset fancied himself like a person overlooking another's letter, and moved aside. It is no secret, she said, smiling. Paula to Charlotte, it begins. ... That's very pretty. ... Oh, and it is about you, murmured Miss Destancy. Me? ... The architect blushed a little. She made no answer, and the machine went on with its story. There was something curious in watching this utterance about himself, under his very nose, in language unintelligible to him. He conjectured whether it were inquiry, praise, or blame, with a sense that it might reasonably be the latter, as the result of his surreptitious look into that blue bedroom, possibly observed and reported by some servant of the house. Direct that every facility be given to Mr. Somerset, to visit any part of the castle he may wish to see. On my return I shall be glad to welcome him as the acquaintance of your relatives. I have two of his father's pictures. Dear me, the plot thickens, he said, as Miss Destancy announced the words. How could she know about me? I sent a message to her this morning, when I saw you crossing the park on your way here, telling her that Mr. Somerset, son of the academician, was making sketches of the castle, and that my father knew something of you. That's her answer. Where are the pictures by my father, that as he has purchased? Oh, not here at least, not unpacked. Miss Destancy then left him to proceed on her journey to Markton, so the nearest little town was called, informing him that she would be at her father's house to receive him at 2 o'clock. Just about one he closed his sketchbook, and set out in the direction as he had indicated. At the entrance to the wood a man was at work pulling down a rotten gate that bore on its battered lock the initials W-S-apostrophe, and erecting a new one whose ironmongery exhibited the letters PP-apostrophe. The warmth of the summer noon did not inconveniently penetrate the dense masses of foliage which now began to overhang the path, except in spots where a ruthless timber felling had taken place in previous years for the purpose of sale. It was that particular half-hour of the day in which the birds of the forest prefer walking to flying, and there being no wind, the hopping of the smallest songster over the dead leaves reached his ear from behind the undergrowth. The track had originally been a well-kept winding drive, but a deep carpet of moss and leaves overlaid it now, though the general outline still remained to show that its curves had been set out with as much care as those of a long walk, and the gradient made easy for carriages, where the natural slopes were great. Felled trunks occasionally lay across it, and alongside were the hollow and fungus boles of trees sawn down in long past years. After a walk of 3/4 of an hour he came to another gate, where the letters PP' again supplanted the historical W-S' . Climbing over this, he found himself on the highway which presently dipped down towards the town of Markton, a place he had never yet seen. It appeared in the distance as a quiet little borough of a few thousand inhabitants, and, without the town boundary on the side he was approaching, stood half a dozen genteel and modern houses, of the detached kind usually found in such suburbs. On inquiry, Sir William de Stancy's residence was indicated as one of these. It was almost new, of street brick, having a central door, and a small bay window on each side, to light the two front parlors. A little lawn spread its green surface in front, divided from the road by iron railings, the low line of shrubs immediately within them being coated with pallid dust from the highway. On the neat piers of the neat entrance gate were chiseled the words Myrtle Villa. Genuine roadside respectability sat smiling on every brick of the eligible dwelling. Perhaps that which impressed Somerset more than the mushroom modernism of Sir William de Stancy's house was the air of healthful cheerfulness which pervaded it. He was shown in by a neat maidservant in black gown and white apron, a canary singing a welcome from a cage in the shadow of the window, the voices of crowing cocks coming over the chimneys from somewhere behind, and the sun and air riddling the house everywhere. A dwelling of those well-known and popular dimensions which allow the proceedings in the kitchen to be distinctly heard in the parlors, it was so planned that a raking view might be obtained through it from the front door to the end of the back garden. The drawing room furniture was comfortable, in the walnut and green rep style of some years ago. Somerset had expected to find his friends living in an old house with remnants of their own antique furniture, and he hardly knew whether he ought to meet them with a smile or a gaze of condolence. His doubt was terminated, however, by the cheerful and tripping entry of Miss de Stancy, who had returned from her drive to Markton, and in a few more moments Sir William came in from the garden. He was an old man of tall and spare build, with a considerable stoop, his glasses dangling against his waistcoat buttons, and the front corners of his coattails hanging lower than the hinderparts, so that they swayed right and left as he walked. He nervously apologized to his visitor for having kept him waiting. "I am so glad to see you," he said, with a mild benevolence of tone, as he retained Somerset's hand for a moment or two. "Partly for your father's sake, whom I met more than once in my younger days, before he became so well known, and also because I learned that you were a friend of my poor nephew John Ravensbury." He looked over his shoulder to see if his daughter were within hearing, and, with the impulse of the solitary to make a confidence, continued in a low tone, "She, poor girl, was to have married John. His death was a sad blow to her, and to all of us. Pray take a seat, Mr. Somerset." The reverses of fortune which had brought Sir William de Stancy to this comfortable cottage awakened in Somerset a warmer emotion than curiosity, and he sat down with a heart as responsive to each speech uttered, as if it had seriously concerned himself, while his host gave some words of information to his daughter on the trifling events that had marked the morning just past. Such as that the cow had got out of the paddock into Miss Powers' field, that the smith who had promised to come and look at the kitchen range had not arrived, that two wasps' nests had been discovered in the garden bank, and that Nick Jones' baby had fallen downstairs. Sir William had large cavernous arches to his eye sockets, reminding the beholder of the vaults in the castle he once had owned. His hands were long and almost fleshless, each knuckle showing like a bamboo joint from beneath his coat sleeves, which were small at the elbow and large at the wrist. All the color had gone from his beard and locks, except in the case of a few isolated hairs of the former, which retained dashes of their original shade at sudden points in their length, revealing that all had once been raven black. But to study a man to his face for long is a species of ill nature which requires a colder temperament, or at least an older heart, than the architect's was at that time. Incurious unobservance is the true attitude of cordiality, and Somerset blamed himself for having fallen into an act of inspection even briefly. He would wait for his host's conversation, which would doubtless be of the essence of historical romance. The favorable bank returns have made the money market much easier today, as I learn. ... said Sir William.
Oh, have they?
... said Somerset. Yes, I suppose they have. ... and something is meant by this unusual quietness in foreign stocks since the late remarkable fluctuations. ... insisted the old man. Is the current of speculation quite arrested, or is it but a temporary lull? ... Somerset said he was afraid he could not give an opinion, and entered very lamely into the subject. But Sir William seemed to find sufficient interest in his own thoughts to do away with the necessity of acquiring fresh impressions from other people's replies. For often after putting a question he looked on the floor, as if the subject were at an end. Lunch was now ready, and when they were in the dining room Mr. Stancy, to introduce a topic of more general interest, asked Somerset if he had noticed the myrtle on the lawn. Somerset had noticed it, and thought he had never seen such a full-blown one in the open air before. His eyes were, however, resting at the moment on the only objects at all out of the common that the dining room contained. One was a singular glass case over the fireplace, within which were some large medieval door keys, black with rust and age, and the others were two full-length oil portraits in the costume of the end of the last century, so out of all proportion to the size of the room they occupied, that they almost reached to the floor. Those originally belonged to the castle yonder, ... said Mr. Stancy, or Charlotte, as her father called her, noticing Somerset's glance at the keys. They used to unlock the principal entrance doors, which were knocked to pieces, in the civil wars. New doors were placed afterwards, but the old keys were never given up, and have been preserved by us ever since. ... They are quite useless mere lumber particularly to me, ... said Sir William. And those huge paintings were a present from Paula, ... she continued. They are portraits of my great-grandfather and mother. Paula would give all the old family pictures back to me, if we had room for them, but they would fill the house to the ceilings. Sir William was impatient of the subject. What is the utility of such accumulations? He asked. Their originals are but clay now, mere forgotten dust, not worthy a moment's inquiry or reflection at this distance of time. Nothing can retain the spirit, and why should we preserve the shadow of the form? London has been very full this year, sir, I have been told. It has, said Somerset, and he asked if they had been up that season. It was plain that the matter with which Sir William de Stancy least cared to occupy himself before visitors was the history of his own family, in which he was followed with more simplicity by his daughter Charlotte. No, said the baronet. One might be led to think there is a fatality which prevents it. We make arrangements to go to town almost every year, to meet some old friend who combines the rare conditions of being in London with being mindful of me, but he has always died or gone elsewhere before the event has taken place. But with a disposition to be happy, it is neither this place nor the other that can render us the reverse. In short, each man's happiness depends upon himself, and his ability for doing with little. He turned more particularly to Somerset, and added with an impressive smile, I hope you cultivate the art of doing with little? Somerset said that he certainly did cultivate that art, partly because he was obliged to. Ah, you don't mean to the extent that I mean. The world has not yet learned the riches of frugality, says, I think, Cicero, somewhere. And nobody can testify to the truth of that remark better than one. If a man knows how to spend less than his income, however small that may be, why, he has the philosopher's stone. And Sir William looked in Somerset's face with frugality written in every pore of his own, as much as to say, and here you see one who has been a living instance of those principles from his youth up. Somerset soon found that, whatever turn the conversation took, Sir William invariably reverted to this topic of frugality. When luncheon was over, he asked his visitor to walk with him into the garden, and no sooner were they alone than he continued, "Well, Mr. Somerset, you are down here sketching architecture for professional purposes. Nothing can be better. You are a young man, and your art is one in which there are innumerable chances." I had begun to think they were rather few, said Somerset. "No, they are numerous enough. The difficulty is to find out where they lie. It is better to know where your luck lies than where your talent lies. That's an old man's opinion."
I'll remember it,
said Somerset. "And now give me some account of your new clubs, new hotels, and new men." What I was going to add, on the subject of finding out where your luck lies, is that nobody is so unfortunate as not to have a lucky star in some direction or other. Perhaps yours is at the antipodes. If so, go there. All I say is, discover your lucky star.
I am looking for it.
You may be able to do two things, one well, the other but indifferently, and yet you may have more luck in the latter. Then stick to that one, and never mind what you can do best. Your star lies there.
There I am not quite at one with you, Sir William.
You should be. Not that I mean to say that luck lies in any one place long, or at any one person's door. Fortune likes. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.